The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
And welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 463. Oh, wait, I'm supposed to go wait. Beyond.
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 All right, there we go. That's that. I guess we did it backwards once again.
The order, that was strange.
Yeah, the order, 1886. Hi, everybody. I'm Max Scova. With me, Marty Sliva.
Hi, Max.
Andrew Goldfarb.
Hey, Max.
And Lucy O'Brien.
Hey, Max.
From a faraway place.
From
who are you?
Faraway land.
That's actually our first bullet point. Lucy's here.
So, yeah,
bullet point one. Who is that?
There is a bullet point that says, who is that? Hi, I'm from the Sydney office. You guys may know me from the Sydney office, and I'm here today from the Sydney office to do Beyond
with you. Do you get paid every time you say Sydney office?
Who is the Sydney office
who's
person?
Sydney office?
So you hear from Cindy, who's a good friend of the show.
Sydney. Good old Sydney.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you down.
It's awesome. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's one of those rare things, like, we tend to only get to see the Australian and the UK team at, like, E3,
yeah.
Or at Coco, really, which, like, is the one time a year where everyone gets in San Francisco.
Or, like, one of you will be at Gamescom for a minute. Like,
for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, a red-hot minute. Yeah. Where, like, every single, like, time we're at Gamescom, it's, like, the best minute.
It's like, oh, hey, Trista. Oh, all right. Well, it's good to see you. You're here for a little while.
I am, yeah. I'm here. I was here on vacation just to see you lovely people, but I'm actually going to stick around a little bit longer to check out some Watch Dogs 2 stuff that's happening in your city. So, yeah, I'm here for another week.
Have you got to play that at all yet?
Have I got to play Watch Dogs 2? Yeah, I played 2 hours before, like the day before I left, and enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed it. And I'm just going to put it out there that I played not very much of the first game.
It was a little bit of a wet blanket.
Well, I was just like, it was one of those sort of things where I was just like, oh, okay, it's an open world, but, like, if it's an open world, I really need to be very invested.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just be semi-invested. And so, seeing as I was only semi-invested, I didn't keep playing.
Yeah. Have you spent much time in San Francisco?
This is my third time in San Francisco, but it's like, this is the first time I've been in San Francisco where I've had some vacation time.
That's cool.
Have you hacked any phones or traffic lights?
That's all I've done. Like, with my beanie and my ripped jeans and my flannel.
Yeah, well, I mean, that, like, is literally how you dress. Those three things are real, yeah.
Yeah, like, I crouch down a lot in alleyways.
Yeah, you have that weird, that's that posture. You do that weird crouch.
Yeah, you know.
You're like Quasimodo.
Yeah.
Hacker slouch. It's like I'm working from home for my startup, but also I'm sitting on the ground. It's like, got my little robot friend out
also
here.
Crouching sucks. Like, that's like the worst,
like, in real
position.
Life?
Yeah.
It does. Like, crouching. It hits the lower back.
Yeah.
And, like, no one looks good crouching.
No,
it's not like,
no,
oh, that's
good.
You at your best.
No one has a sexy crouch.
People always say, like, The Last of Us is a great game, but I don't think it looks great to be that man in that game because he's just messing up his lumbar.
He's always bent over.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that would hurt.
Also, just, I don't know, there's something funny about, like, a game where you have the option to play it stealthily, but when other NPCs aren't really kind of going with that, so you just look like you're, it's like when you do excessive, like, tactical roles and like we need to sneak around, and then it's like whoa, whoa.
Which also, like, I was watching you play Mafia this weekend, and for some reason it wasn't letting you hug to cover.
Yeah.
So you were just this weird guy like chicken dance walking around. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, trying to hug.
I was like,
to
nope,
a wall.
Oh, at this point we're not doing cover anymore. No, we've gotten rid of that feature in the game.
Yep.
But really, like, if you actually think about it, I remember when I was reviewing The Evil Within, mm-hmm. and in that game basically I think I was crouching pretty much like 90% of the time. Or it might have even been Batman. Like, it was some game recently. I was just like, God, if I actually could, like, look at myself, like...
Yeah.
You know, it is. It's this weird kind of, like, strange, like, chicken walk thing.
I like the idea that the monsters and the evil within are like, oh, what is that? Ugh, yeah, gross.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Why is it walking like that?
Anyway,
Max,
man,
you're
I'm
at
Comic Con. I'm like, as we speak, I'm sort of, instead of having the usual Beyond logo up on the screen behind us, I have a PlayStation plugged in because I need to download... Friggin' Tomb Raider.
If you go to the store, it should say previously purchased.
What store? Go to the store.
Download
get
the Destiny public alpha.
No,
that
here, go back.
Like a good time.
Go back.
Okay, so we're gonna do a podcast where you walk me through how
to
download.
Go to the PlayStation store.
I'm not even on my. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not even on my account. This is on Brian's. So yeah.
So
sorry
go to that.
Everybody listening at home.
And if did he buy it? He bought it?
I don't know.
If he
redeemed
it or bought it.
Download it. And I'm like, the last time I tried to click download something on here, somebody downloaded Modern Warfare.
This is what we're going to do. Give the controller to Andrew. Yeah. He'll try to download it. You went to Comic-Con.
I went to New York Comic-Con this last week, and that's why I'm sort of frantic, like, because it's been busy. We've got the IGN house party coming up this weekend, and then there's Comic-Con this last weekend, mm-hmm. And we're downloading a game while recording a podcast. Yeah. So a lot of busy stuff going on.
You're going to the Tonys?
What?
You're going to the Tonys
next
week.
For my performance in the Hamiltons.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the sequel to Hamilton, when there's more than one Hamilton.
You played Alan Basket, inventor of the Wicker Basket.
I don't think he owns this game.
Okay, so Brian doesn't own Tomb Raider. Anyway, New York Comic Con was awesome.
Yeah.
I actually hadn't ever been to that one before. It's a lot smaller than San Diego, and it's also in a city that I think people go to for... reasons other than Comic-Con.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, New York is an attraction in and of itself.
Yeah, whereas, like, San Diego during Comic-Con, that city transforms to Comic-Con.
That's like Comic-Con, the pop-up shop.
Whereas, for New York Comic-Con, it's just, like, a little thing in the corner of New York and the rest of the city goes on.
Yeah.
Yep.
But does that make it more, like, because I've actually never been to San Diego Comic-Con, and I just hear it's chaos and quite exhausting. So having a smaller...
It's smaller, but it's still incredibly busy and crowded.
Right.
But you can definitely escape.
Yeah, what's cool about it is that, like, when my day's done and I'm like, I don't need to do Comic-Con coverage anymore, I can, like, go to a museum, or I can go to see things that aren't strictly tied to what I cover.
Or you can go to an amazing pizza place.
Exactly.
Yeah, or even you did exactly what Brian and I did last year, which was we went up to Rockstar, or went down to Rockstar, which is nice, going downtown and getting away from the Comic-Con crowd.
Yeah, that was rad. Went and hung out with the Rockstar guys, and we just did, like, a live stream. It was really fun, actually. There was they just launched the Bikers, like, DLC for GTA Online, and the thing is, there have been people who've been playing, like, they've been role-playing as biker gangs. So there's these motorcycle clubs in the game that have been existing on their own terms without that being, like, part of the content. Like, there's no way of being like, oh, I'm starting a motorcycle club. They're just sort of like, yeah, we start a motorcycle club because we can.
That's so cool.
And they like super dedicated to it. They're like, okay, we don't use any aim assist. The following guns are not allowed. They're like, we only use explosives or, like, sticky mines for re-engineering the landscape or something. And I'm like, you mean to blow up a fence if it's in the way? Like, they were like about to, and they're like, they ride in formation, like they practice. So it's like just taking that game to, like, so far to the next level. And they do charity events.
Well,
they,
and
like,
it's,
hang out in real
that's
life.
That's one of those things, like, the word sandbox gets thrown around a lot, but it's sort of misused. Like, we'll talk about Mafia later. Like, that's not a sandbox game. Like, you can't call that a sandbox game. Whereas with this, it's like, I don't think anyone ever intended for this to happen when they made that game, but people took what the Housers and what Rockstar put in there and were like, well, what if I just start shaping this differently, and what if we move this here and I create my own game?
And then that influenced DLC that's actually out, which is even cooler.
Yeah.
Yep. But it was really cool hanging out with those guys, and we were on the stream with, like, the leaders of a couple motorcycle gangs who called a ceasefire for the first week of this DLC being out, so that everyone could kind of just get a feel for it and enjoy it without worrying about, like, you know, getting messed up.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's really, really,
is there going to be, like, an in-game, like, Altamont event where, like, they end up going to a Stones concert and stabbing someone?
God, that's really dark.
Yeah.
Jesus.
That happened.
I know that happened, but I mean, probably. Apparently the big issue
I wasn't the one who instigated,
like,
that.
One thing, they'll be, like, practicing, like, they'll be, you know, in, like, kind of the public area, just just driving around, and they'll be like practicing their you know, their formation, and they'll be like riding down the road together and be like, all right, we're gonna practice riding single file or whatever. They're like, all right, let's do 2-2-3-2-2, like, let's get in order this way. And then like some random idiot will show up in a jet and just be like, oh, there's like 8 dots going down the map all together. I wonder what happens if I shoot that with missiles. And then it's like, oh, you've incurred the wrath of a motorcycle gang that doesn't use aim assist. Like, you've got a bunch of bikers after you. Like, I mean, it's just kind of, it's so funny. Like,
yeah. I remember hearing stories like that, like about stuff like DayZ and Rust, about how like the way people would just play those games is like, oh no, we've started this society, mm-hmm. and you'll encounter a random player and be like, hey, you have to put this bag over your head and you have to give us all your items.
Yeah, there's still a feature on IGN that Mitch wrote about Rust and about like that, like emergent gameplay. Yeah. R.I.P. Mitch.
I don't know who Mitch is. I don't know. He's forgotten. anyway, Mafia 3 came out. Speaking of Take-Two Interactive,
why is there a Space Jam
crime
picture?
Properties? What?
There's a Space Jam picture in this.
You can't just refer to something that no one else can see. For those of you listening or watching at home, we've got these notes that we write that are sometimes very stupid.
Sense. So we wrote Mafia 3, and then Max wrote Marty hated it, and then I wrote 7.5 is not hate you monster, and then he put a picture of the monster.
Of the monsters.
Oh, the
okay.
monsters.
And then,
okay,
below
that
it says, welcome to the Space Jam. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
So you said in your review that there weren't enough Silly Boats missions and that the graphics were bad.
I didn't say either.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't read your review, but I made up some of my own notes about it.
I mean, there could have been more Silly Boat missions.
Yeah. Their graphics are actually pretty good.
There's going to be a Silly Boat expansion pack.
Yeah, so I gave the game a 7.5. I played through it primarily on Xbox One, and I dabbled in the PS4 and PC versions. I adore the story. I think it's legitimately one of the best stories in a AAA game of this generation.
Really?
Yeah.
That's okay.
The characters, the writing, the performances of Lincoln and your three lieutenants and sort of the priest. And I love the framing device of it goes forward a couple of years after the events of the games when your CIA contact is under deposition and he's sort of retelling the events of the games. But then it goes forward 30 years to when the priest is an old man and he's reflecting upon this time in his life when he's like, I befriended a mass murderer and this is something I've been weighing on my conscience for my entire adult life and I don't know what to do about it. Yeah. And so all of this stuff is just like, how is this in a AAA game? It's like how Spec Ops, like when Spec Ops came out, you're like, you have no business telling this story.
That makes sense because Walt Williams worked on that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Walt also worked a little bit on Mafia 3 too. I think that was his last game. So story's incredible front to back. There's variations of the ending depending on what you do, which I loved.
Yeah.
That being said, the moment-to-moment gameplay is just sort of bland. Across the board, bland.
So, like, what? Like, elaborate.
It is.
I'm sorry, I haven't read your review.
No, that's
I've
fine.
Been on holiday there.
That's
so
fine.
I've got an excuse. These guys don't have an excuse.
It is. It follows the exact mold that GTA 3 started, where it's drive from point A to point B, grab your mission.
Right.
Finish your mission. But the thing is, it doesn't do anything poorly, but it doesn't really do anything well. Mm-hmm. The cover system is adequate when it works, but far too often, we were joking about it earlier, it just wouldn't work. And so Andrew saw me in the middle of a gunfight, me trying to just be like, I'm going to get behind this wall. And it's like, well, no, the system decided to stop working. The guns are, again, adequate. It is. I found myself just using the base pistol from the beginning of the game throughout the entire game.
Really?
I never needed anything else. There's stealth kills, which is just shows how dumb the enemy AI is. You whistle when you're in cover, and they'll walk over, and then you stab them, and a guy will be like, what happened over there? And you whistle, and then he comes over.
That
and
was Martin's. Crouching?
There's so much crouching.
Is there like a lot of duck walking?
Oh, there is so much crouching.
His whole game was that there's a mechanic where when you whistle, guys come to you one at a time. So he would just sit in a doorway, crouch, and whistle, and stab a guy, and then whistle and stab the next guy, and there's like this like slowly piling up bodies.
And the 90% of the missions fall into the same couple buckets of go into this building and kill a guy, or destroy the cargo of this specific district, whether it's drugs or whiskey or porn. And then
who'd ever do that? It's terrible.
Cargoes of porn.
Yeah, would you,
who just a big pallet of porn?
Looks like there's a bunch of fun coming into the city. We got to get rid of it. It's got a bunch of fun Milton Bradley games. There's some Super Balls, porn, whiskey. Gonna nuke all that stuff, and everyone's gonna have a real bad time.
And those get like the thing is, you go through that cycle for every district in the game, so you literally go through the cycle of doing multiple missions like that 9 times.
So it just gets repetitive.
Yeah, but that said, each district culminates in... the story's sort of a Kill Bill revenge tale at its base core, so you're slowly working your way up the mafia hierarchy. But each mission or each district culminates in a really cool set-piece mission. And like we showed at E3, we had the big one on the riverboat that's sinking. Yeah. There's one in this flooded, abandoned... quasi-racist amusement park. I mean, just straight-up racist amusement park. That's like, it's a small world, but just with Song of the South.
Yeah, and there was literally a Klan rally.
Yeah, there's a Klan rally that you go and just burn a dude alive.
I hear they handle it, like, quite well.
Yeah, they do. I mean, that's the thing. The other thing is I'm like, oh, this is... You know, when someone is dealing with a half-black protagonist coming back from Vietnam in 1968 Louisiana, you're like, there's no way a video game can handle this tactfully, but it does.
Yeah.
And it handles it even in the mechanics where there's certain neighborhoods where if you rob a car in an affluent neighborhood, the cops are called and they will come right away in full force. If you rob it in the Hollows, which is like the starting off the black neighborhood, they might not even call the cops. Or the cops just won't come. And so it's like, and there's certain buildings you enter where they're like, hey, we don't serve you. Like, get out. If you stay in, like, the cops will be called.
I mean, the crazy thing about this game, and I've said this to you a couple times, is like, because Marty played a bunch of this in my apartment and I just watched, basically. I find it fascinating that, like, the landscape of the industry is that this probably had to be an open world game, whereas I don't think mechanically it needed to be. Like, it seems like the story and performances are so good that maybe it would have benefited from just being linear or even being, like, quasi-open world, like a Bioshock or something like that.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. The open world things are, in my opinion, the weakest elements of the game. I really like there's a lieutenant system where early on you get three sort of lieutenants who work under you, one of which is Vito, who is the main character of Mafia 2. And so you have these three. You have an Irish dude, an Italian dude, and a Haitian woman.
Do they ever walk into a bar together?
Yes, they do, actually. I think you have your meeting in a bar.
There's a priest there, too.
There is a priest. But every time you take over a district, you have to choose which one of them you assign it to. And I kept doing Vito because you get perks based on which character it is. So the Haitian woman's, you will continually upgrade your arsenal, whereas Vito was health-based stuff. And eventually, Cassandra, the Haitian, is like, hey, if you don't give me this next one, we're going to have a problem. And I was like, well, I liked her as a character, but I'm like, mechanically, I'm siding with Vito because, like, your perks are way more in line with the way I play. And I gave one too many things away, and Cassandra was like, all right, this is done. She leaves the meeting, and the mission that pops up is you have to kill Cassandra.
Holy crap.
Yeah, and so it's like this thing, and then it's like this super, like, you kill her. I'm just like, oh, this is, like, really sad. Like, I felt genuinely bad. And, like, depending on which of the lieutenants you kill, which ones you keep alive, which ones like you, that impacts the end of the game. Hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it does certain things. I gave it a 7.5, despite the fact that mechanically the game is so average, like, everything else that the game tries to do and does accomplish is so good and really does elevate the thing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the it's so weird to try to tell a story in an open world game because it's like, it's an open world. It's a sandbox is not conducive to storytelling. That's not something you're making up on your own. So when that's pulled off well, it's incredibly impressive. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like I asked the guy, Hayden Blackman, when I was up at noon, and it was like, what kind of stuff do you have, you know, them doing in the open world in the sandbox? And he's like, well, you know, it doesn't really make any sense if you're on this revenge mission to, like, go street racing. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like kind of, you know.
But, I mean, that's the thing, though, is if you're on a revenge mission, make it a linear game about a revenge mission.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I think GTA 5 worked so incredibly well, because it was like, which of these activities make sense for the individual characters? Mm-hmm. And you're still playing as, like, one character in this. So it's...
And GTA 5, like, also has always kind of been about anarchy. Well, the GTA series has always been about anarchy.
Yeah.
So, like, almost it doesn't even matter if it doesn't quite fit that this character is going to suddenly go racing or, like, whatever, because it's just that's the series.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of.
It's also games like, where you get rocket launchers and jetpacks and you get on a roof and try to cause as much chaos before you die.
Yeah. I would also rather, like, ultimately, like, look, it's a video game, and, like, Mass Effect 3 is a really good example of, like, yeah, doing any side quest doesn't make sense because you're supposed to be rushing to save the world, but having side quests to do prevents it from being boring, and actually it's a nice step. Like, yes, technically those don't super fit the narrative, but truthfully, like, I would prefer kind of messing with the immersion a little bit and giving me something to do, as opposed to being like, oh, our game is, like, all immersive all the time, but you're going to be bored out of your mind if you're not on a story mission.
And there are, like, there's collectibles, like, there's Playboy magazines and album covers and sort of pinup posters, but they don't do anything. Like, there's no collect 50 of these and you get a perk, or there's, I don't even think there's an achievement tied to them. One cool thing with the Playboys, though, is that you can read the articles of the magazines you get. And so there's like a 5-page interview with Noam Chomsky in this game that you could just read. And like, there's Gore Vidal interviews. And I'm that's probably the first time I've ever seen that in a AAA game.
That's great. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, like, just as a total aside, yesterday I was in a thrift shop and I opened a Playboy magazine, and it was actually the first Playboy magazine I've ever opened in my life. I don't, like, you know, I'm a woman, clearly. Wasn't around Playboy magazines a lot. And then the internet came along and, you know, porno magazine. I didn't realize, like, this is a Playboy magazine from, like, 1981 or something. I mean, they weren't kidding that there were a lot of articles in there.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I honestly, I don't know what I was, well, I was expecting, just boobs, right? But, yeah, there were...
I mean, Hunter S. Thompson wrote for Playboy.
Roald Dahl. Yeah. I mean, there were like Shel Silverstein drawings in there. It was like kind of a weird intersection.
Yeah, it's like a lifestyle publication, I guess, that also had naked women in it, which is a really weird, like, and it's weird, like, the modern era of Playboy is interesting, too, because, like, they had a video game website. Like, they had coverage of, like, pop culture. Right. Yeah.
They're now safe for work, essentially. Like, you can read their articles on their website, and they're like, hey, this actually does better traffic than if we have stuff that gets blocked by search filters. So, you know.
Makes sense.
Interesting.
Yep. Yeah. Also, and I said, the soundtrack is probably the best use of licensed music to set a tone for a time and place since Vice City.
Damn.
Just awesome. Rolling Stones, CCR, Sam Cooke, Bob Dylan, Jimi Hendrix. Like, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
We had to turn all of that off for every video we recorded, though, because we did not want to get our YouTube channel flagged.
God, that's annoying. On that note,
Sam Cooke.
Rise of the Tomb Raider, which is something I'm not currently downloading on this PS4 here, but which is a game. You want to just pull it up as like a cool background image or something?
Yeah, there's a cool trailer you can get to play.
Awesome. Yeah. This is like right upon us. This is like coming out. Recently.
Yeah, I think
this
it's
is the one with
today.
all the bells and whistles,
right?
And everything.
Today's Tuesday. Wait, and so you reviewed Rise of the Tomb Raider, right?
I did.
The original.
I reviewed the original and all the DLC that came out.
Baba Yaga?
Yes.
She's a witch.
Yeah. But I haven't actually got my hands on this. I haven't touched it.
I think Jonathan updated
it. Jonathan reviewed it.
And then you and I played... Well, you played most of it at Crystal,
Blood
and
Ties.
I played the rest of it at Gamescom.
Blood Ties?
So, yeah, there's Blood Ties, Lars Nightmare, and then Blood Ties also available in PSVR.
Yeah, so Blood Ties is sort of the, for lack of a better term, Gone Home.
Yeah.
Hour-long story where you go around Croft Manor. There's no combat, and it's you sort of piecing together the story of your family and solving light puzzles.
The frame of it is that you weren't technically named in the will for Croft Manor.
Right.
So when your father dies, you have like this angry uncle who's like, well, I actually get the rights to the house unless you can find evidence that specifically says they wanted you to. And there's a safe. And you're like, well, how am I going to guess my dad's combination? And then you go around the house and learn a bunch of stuff about his history to try and figure out how to get the documents you need.
That sounds awesome.
That's,
and it's actually
really
cool. Yeah, really cool. Really great writing in VO. There's like light puzzle stuff where like, this room is dark and you need to get the headlamp. And
so you mean literally light? Light puzzles.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, there are. Yeah, there is, like, you need to find
a
lighter.
Where's the darn light switch?
You need to find a lighter to start a fireplace so that you could see heat.
No spoilers.
Activated ink.
Yeah, and
they might have made all that up.
They do really smart stuff like that, and it's funny because then they took, like, and that's all the Croft Manor stuff that obviously wasn't in the core game because you don't really explore the house. But then they took that environment they created, and they were like, well, let's make a weird video gamey mode. So there's this other mode called Lara's Nightmare, where it's all set at night in Croft Manor, but your uncle's voice is suddenly really scary and otherworldly, and it's like you're fighting demons and zombies in the house, and it's like a almost like a Resident Evil style. Like, you have to like take out these like big like weird floating head bosses, and like there's like a lot of like resource scarcity where you're like constantly like switching guns and finding ammo and things like that.
That's so, like, I love that they're doing that because it's making use of the environment they obviously spend a lot of time on.
Yeah
exactly.
I mean, I think it's one of the coolest things we've seen with kind of modern sandbox design is like if you've got a large space that you've created, and there's kind of, you know, there's things that are obviously fun to do with it, but being like, okay, let's try different angles. Like, I mean, Metal Gear Solid 5 was a good instance of this where they were like, we've built a bunch of little maps, and it's the configuration of how enemies are in there or what you're trying to do that changes the entire, you know, form of gameplay. But this is cool that to see it go in, you know, two drastically different angles. Like, one is a totally just poke around narrative thing, and the other one's like, kill the zombies, yeah. video games.
Yeah. And it's also, if you don't want one, you can have the other. Like, yeah. if you're yeah. a guy who just wants to go shoot a bunch of stuff, you can. Yeah. If you're somebody who wants to, like, watch a more narrative-focused yeah. mode, you can
and
do that.
And also, the Gone Homey one is available. You can play it in PSVR, which is actually yeah. really cool. Evidently, though, there are two different, what, you
I want
Gone Homey?
I want to say Gone Homies. I want to see a, yeah. a game where Lara Croft's got to go around and find all her homies figurines.
I'm just really stoked that, like, PlayStation players can finally, well, you know, PlayStation owners only can finally play this game.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Because,
one of the best games last
you
year.
Know, we've known that it's been an amazing game for, like, how long? Like, a year?
Year? Yeah.
A year, yeah.
And, yeah, I'm just really excited because I was really surprised at how much I loved Rise of the Tomb Raider back Same. Then. And, yeah, so I'm stoked that people can finally actually play it on PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad I waited, honestly, because, like, there's always that kind of... If you play something on one system and then you want to go back and revisit it, there's always sort of that sense of like, oh, no matter how good the game is, there's like, I got to do the tutorial again, or I have to do this
right.
again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like the fact that I haven't touched it at all is like, it's entirely
frustrating.
I'm
really curious to see your thoughts because of having played it after Uncharted 4, mm-hmm. just because all of us, you know, Brian obviously played last fall, we played Tomb Raider and yeah. then played Uncharted 4 in the summer or spring or whenever mm-hmm. it came out. Whereas, mm-hmm. and so. We couldn't help but, or I couldn't help at least, playing Uncharted 4 and drawing comparisons to Tomb Raider. What yeah. it did better than Tomb Raider, what Tomb Raider did better than it. Because they are, despite the fact that Tomb Raider is more of an open world game than Uncharted, they do a lot of the same things.
And it's not even, it's like Tomb Raider also sort of feels like a smart, it's like it's so weird to compare it to Naughty Dog, but it feels like a smart combination of The Last of Us and Uncharted. Like, you have weapon crafting, you have like this like mm-hmm. sort of like upgrade system, and all that's not in Uncharted at all, and nor should it be. Like, that's not, you know, Uncharted is fine being its own thing, but I think having played Tomb Raider first, like, that just personally is way more up my alley, like having like sort of like RPG tree type ways to upgrade things.
We talked about with Uncharted of like I couldn't get over the lack of ownership of weapons.
Yeah.
Whereas in like Tomb Raider and The Last of Us, it's like you're crafting things that are like that mean something to you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you're investing in them. Whereas everything's sort of disposable in Uncharted. Which
well,
again,
and plus
doesn't,
you're creating your own playstyle that yeah. way too, right? You're like, if I only use the bow, then I'm going to upgrade the bow and make the bow better. Whereas like if I only use a gun, then I'll upgrade guns. And in Uncharted, it's not that. It's just like pick up everything yeah. and everyone has the same baseline. And I think like that's a just different way to play a game.
Yeah. It's totally fine to compare the two, also, because like they're at the end of the day. I mean, to be reductive as hell, they're very similar products going after the same audience
sure.
from different companies.
Oh,
you know?
My God. Well, when my Uncharted 4 review went live, you guys will remember that everyone was comparing the two, because obviously I reviewed both of them.
Yeah.
So some of the assumptions there were quite extreme.
Well, yeah. I always hated that, because people would be like, Call of Duty or Battlefield, which is better? And it's like, they're different, you know?
They are different. Like, but yes, I totally understand why people are like, well, you know, you enjoy Tomb Raider more than Uncharted, and they're basically the same, except one character is a woman. But no, that's being very reductive.
Yeah.
And they are different games in a similar genre. But I do just want to like also just give a shout out, like, again, before we move on, just to Lara Croft as a character in the series.
Yep.
Like, I just like, you know, since the reboot, I just think she is just, she's such a wonderful character mm-hmm. because she's not overly sexualized. She's very confident. She's very much her own sort of person, and she's fallible. And mm-hmm. I like the fact that you can kind of, you're let into her own like psyche with mm-hmm. her little like, you know, little like quips that she says to herself, the way she talks to herself and stuff like that. Like, I really got into her mind, and I really liked that. And
yep.
yeah, I would love to see more of that sort of style of writing, I guess, in these AAAs.
Yeah.
I'm struggling to think of a character that's been rebooted or reinvented as successfully.
Yeah, I agree.
To go from
agree.
Like this like kind of just a polygonal pinup to just like the floats around through dinosaur space to being like, oh, here's this girl who has a hard time killing a deer, and then she's...
I mean, that's yeah. the moment to me that, like, when I played the first reboot, and she, like, has to skin the deer, and she's, like, pretty much sobbing, because mm-hmm. she's
yeah.
like, I don't want to have to do this. I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah, and, like, she's a human being,
yeah.
which I feel like there's so many, like, just two-dimensional video game protagonists that it's
yeah.
nice to have someone who's well-rounded. I mean, I feel like with her, I think it's a testament to what a good job Crystal did that in the first game, I just don't care about supporting cast at all, but I liked the game and I liked saving them because I cared about Lara and she cared about them.
Yeah,
and
that's
that was
right.
honestly enough for me.
Yeah. If there's one thing that in whatever the third game is, I would want change. It's stronger supporting characters.
Yeah, I agree.
Because she is such an awesome core. Whereas like Uncharted, sort of every supporting character is strong.
Yeah, like across the board, Uncharted, like the whole cast is really memorable. Yeah. Yeah, I do agree with you. Like they for the next game, definitely a stronger supporting cast. Just to match Lara, because Lara is such an amazing character. Because
they also like gameplay wise, it's solid. Like you did it. Just build it. Like you have the best foundation possible for gameplay.
I enjoyed the first one the most when it was isolating, you know, when it wasn't about like, oh, there's your friend, you gotta save you, there's that big guy who looks like Voss from Far Cry put on a lot of weight or whatever, and like, it was just like, it's so much more fun when you're just like alone in this universe and
and that goes back to the original Tomb Raider that we all played when we were kids, right, where that was like the first like game for many of us that evoked that kind of sense of isolation and and like discovering the environment and all these like magical things that just were so incredibly new, and you felt like you were stumbling across them by yourself.
I totally forgot about this as one of the other new features in this until you mentioned that. The last new mode they put in is the survival mode that was DLC in Rise of Tomb Raider and Xbox.
Right.
Is now co-op. And it's actually really cool. It's almost like a weird... It's like a little bit of Dark Souls, a little bit of like Don't Starve Together kind of stuff, where it is you're out in the wilderness, you're hunting, you're gathering resources, and you have these meters you're maintaining, and you basically just stay alive for as long as you can, as many days as you can, and if you die, then you lose everything.
Yeah.
And so it's just a really, like, it is that feel that you're describing of, like, being out in the wilderness and, like, feeling like you are, like, isolated, but you can do it with a friend, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, one of the best games of 2015, still one of the best games of 2016.
Cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of best games of 2015 or 16 or whatever year it is, I don't care. Ratchet and Clank is $20 on PSN.
Yeah.
And you should totally play it because that is a really, really good video game.
Yes. Yep. It is bright. It is colorful. It is funny. It is so much fun to play through. I feel like that's one of those games that it sold well, but like Sunset Overdrive, I feel like it is such an incredible game.
You are a damn simpleton if you don't pick this up for $20.
So, I mean, what if they just don't have the money?
Yeah, you're a damn simpleton.
What if they don't have the money? What if they don't have the money?
I don't know. Then I don't know. Go sell a leg.
Sell one leg.
Sell one
doesn't
leg.
Have to be yours.
Break.
Get on down there.
Watch the documentary. Don't Breathe. Rob a blind man's house in Detroit. But watch out. He's got secrets.
Yeah.
It'll work out great for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Everything works really out great for those characters.
Yeah. Head on down to the boardwalk and sell that leg.
I feel like Dan Simpleton sounds like it would be like the Halloween Twitter name of Dan Simpleton.
Dan Stapleton.
Yeah, that's true.
Aw, I feel bad now. People are going to say that in the comments.
No, they won't. Dan made his Beyond debut last week.
Did he?
Also, Dan is very much the opposite of a simpleton.
He's a very smart man.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Ratchet and Clank, like, I never really cared much for the original, like the original games. There are parts of this, the new one, that I wish they'd been less faithful to the original, because I feel like there's stuff like the surfer character is infuriating.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so like, oh, go back to DreamWorks, you idiot. but yeah, like it's just a beautiful game. Like the fact that they can be like, here's an art direction you might not really gel with, but like just the lighting and the colors, the way it animates, is just art. Insane.
And just like the fur textures and like the subtle movements. Yeah, I think it's right up there with Bloodborne as my favorite PS4 exclusive.
Yeah. I cannot wait to play the Spider-Man game they're making. It's going to be awesome.
Right? I keep forgetting that they're making a Spider-Man game.
So I'll make the Spider-Man game noise.
I hope we hear more.
Doesn't have a Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
I feel like PSX would be a good place to learn more about that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Took our Tomb Raider backdrop.
So I want to talk about Westworld.
Oh,
even though that's even though it's a TV show, for those of you not paying attention, this is a TV show that is loosely based on one of Michael Crichton's first novels, which is basically about a funky cowboy theme park full of fake people. But the new TV show is like so totally about video games without being about video games, and it's
crazy.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So because Crichton's like movie, which is made in, I'm probably getting this 70s. Totally wrong, like early 70s, I think, was very much like, you know, okay, the theme park, something goes wrong, and it's basically like, you know, like Jurassic Park.
It is Jurassic,
like it's Jurassic Park, but with cowboy robots pursuing you instead of a T-Rex. But yeah, they've taken it in such a crazy, new, and interesting way in the series where, it is all about people playing the park like it's a video game.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all of a sudden, like, looking through it, because I saw Westworld, the original movie, back when I was, I don't know, like 13 or something.
Yeah.
And now I'm however old I am, and I've played so many video games, and I look through the lens as a gamer, right? And I can just see that this is almost like 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years down the line, this is mm-hmm. the end game for mm-hmm. video games. Like, it is the complete immersive interactive totally. Experience.
Well, it's really
with
funny
no
to think about it,
because
like when Crichton wrote the book, their video games were like maybe Pong. Like right. there wasn't anything there yet. So to be like, oh, this is a fictional universe where choice is your entire thing. He was going after like, you know, the kind of theme park.
Like Disneyland.
There
yeah.
were those like yeah. those Wild West towns where you're like, oh, there's going to be a fake gunfight at noon. But like, oh, what if I could be a part of it? Mm-hmm. And now like we're in a post Red Dead Redemption world where it's like, do you want to be like a mean person or you want to be like a good person?
Yeah, yeah, and there's, I mean, it is basically an open world game. I mean, there's NPCs, there are various quests, there yeah. are main quests, there are side
yeah.
quests.
The show deals yeah. with the fact that if you have to remove a handful of these, they're called hosts, so it's the robots that you interact with. If you have to remove these characters, how does it impact the quest?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you're like, literally think about a game like Red Dead or like Skyrim. You're like, well, if you took away the bartender who gives me yeah. the quest to get this thing, how do I get this thing?
Yep.
And so it is like, this is, it's not like us being crazy and trying to put ourselves in the show. Like, the show is absolutely influenced by video games.
Mm-hmm. And you're even seeing, like, there's this one character who's the writer. He's, like, the head writer. And you can see him trying to, and I can just imagine this conversation going on in a video game writer's room
yep.
where the head writer is trying to pitch something and everyone else is like, dude, like, this is your story. Every open world game should be about the player's story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can see that push and pull in the series as the writer keeps trying to, you know, put himself into yeah. the world.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was someone on Twitter, it might have been Nick Robinson from Polygon, I'll just give him credit for this joke even if it wasn't him, but who would like jokingly was like, oh, Westworld is a documentary about Bethesda Game Studios. And it's like, I totally get that. Like, yeah. It feels like what it would be like, because I totally agree with you. Like, yeah, I can yeah. picture those conversations happening in the context of games.
It's really, without spoiling it, there's a moment where he writes this monologue for a character,
and the
monologue gets interrupted, and he's like, oh, like, they didn't even get to the best part.
Yeah.
And I was playing Mafia this weekend, and
I'm
driving, and the characters are like, I'm driving to my mission, and two characters in the car, the guy's telling this story, and it's just like, really good story. And then right when they're about to get to the punchline of the story, I go past the trigger mark, and I trigger the actual cutscene. And so I'm like, now I never know how that story ends. And so I'm totally like, whoever wrote this story did a really good job of writing a story, and because of my actions, I don't get to know how it ends. And so, like, I robbed them of that.
Yeah. One of my favorite things in GTA is when you're just, like, driving along, and the characters are having a conversation, then you, like, hit, like, a street sign, and they're like, so anyway, we're going to have to go down to the docks, or we're going to steal... And then you're like, and then there's like that awkward pause, and they're like, so we're gonna have to go down to the docks, and you're like, all right,
yeah.
It's like a weird car ride.
Yeah, no, it's so good, and it also sort of brings up that again, trying not to spoil anything, but it brings up this idea of players trying to crack the meta. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like trying mm-hmm. to crack the end game and discover what it's all about,
mm-hmm.
and like. You know, there is one character in particular who you can sort of see being very brutal and acting and being that bad guy and doing all that stuff because he doesn't care about the quests and all mm-hmm. that stuff. He just wants to get to the bottom of of the meta, which is of course like something that, you know, so many gamers do once they've played a game enough times and they know the world inside out. Like GTA 5 is another really good example where everyone's just trying to like find those hidden Easter eggs and doing like basically anything they can.
And there's stuff where like you don't even know what it is. Like there was a bit with like the UFO in GTA 5 that only appears at certain times in the in-game clock, and like there were like weird hieroglyphs and mm-hmm. people were trying to figure. I don't think they figured
it
out yet.
Yeah. My favorite part of this is that like someone else on Twitter said this. There's a lot of smart thoughts about this show on Twitter.
Congrats, Nick Robinson.
Another Nick Robinson.
Nick Robinson of Twitter.com.
No, but there's someone else was saying that like everyone we follow is a console player. But then Ed Harris's character is like a PC guy data mining.
Yeah,
and I think that's
right.
like such an interesting way to look at
it. Well, and it's also like not only is it digging into a game like GTA 5, where you're like, oh, did Rockstar put something in this? But it's also like speedruns, where you're like, oh, this guy beat Ocarina of Time in 15 minutes because he backflipped a bunch and all of a sudden went to the last dungeon.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't intended. Like, no one intended to put that there, but you just broke the game enough.
And as gamers also, it also makes, like, I've been watching it and thinking, like, how would I... how would I go into this world? Like, what would I do? Would I, you know, if I had one shot, what would I do? Would I try and mess around, or would I play by their rules?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is that I would play by their rules.
Yeah. I mean, totally. Like, I was thinking that, too. Like, I would totally go there and just, like, quietly sit at the bar and have conversations.
Well, like, because it's like half like escapist video game thing where you're like, yeah, you can go in there, you can bang out, you can kill people, you can ride a horse or whatever, but then it's also like,
ah, the big three.
You can also just go hiking and have a nice meal. And it's like, like things you can do at an actual resort and then things you can do in video games.
It's still a lot of fun. Like,
there's that scene where there's like a nice family that like finds a girl painting and they're like, that's a nice painting. And she's like, thanks, it's getting dark, you should go home. They're like, okay, yeah. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, that would be me. Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to watch in the context of, I mean, it's a great show in any way, like, I think in the context of gaming and, like, in playing games like this, I think there's an extra layer to it that's super interesting. And, like, Jonathan Nolan said in an interview that, like, Red Dead and Bioshock Infinite and other games did sort of inspire a little bit of what's there. So,
yeah.
I love this show. I totally can't recommend it enough.
It's really cool to see, like, high-quality conventional media that's taking cues from video games without being stupid.
Yeah. and just like, just quickly, Jonathan Nolan and his wife Lisa Joy are the masterminds behind it, and they were actually talking about how they play GTA differently. So he blasts through the missions and it's just like all about getting through the story, and she is someone who stops at every street light. And you know what I mean? So
what's really
interesting is that you've got those two people in charge, and you're seeing those sort of dynamics working in the show.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I love that.
Oh, I also meant to say I did a Westworld VR experience New York Comic Con, which was incredibly cool and weird. Also, like, if it seems like we're going too deep on this, this is two episodes in. So, if you
and it's on. Wait, I don't know. It's on HBO.
We don't know what the hell this show is like yet.
Also, the show might get awful by the end.
It could.
Then the kangaroo showed up
real fast.
Man, in episode three, when all the animals started talking, it was really weird. That Superman crossover.
I don't know why they got Gilbert Gottfried to do the voice. But no, like, it was really strange. They basically had this like pop-up shop at Comic-Con where you walk up and it's in this like kind of off the beaten path. Like, there's this, it was like this side street up the way from the convention center. It had a big sign out front that had the Westworld logo. You open the door and you're greeted by like actual hosts. Like, there was this very handsome man in like an all white suit, white, just entirely white, and he's, ah, hello there. Do you have an appointment with us? And we're like, yeah, we got at 11:45, I think. We're from IGN.
I'm just picturing Brian like, brah, brah.
Yeah, and they're like, ah, excellent. Now, have you put any thought into what kind of a host you'd like, a male or female? And Brian's like, female. And I'm like, well, I guess for the sake of journalism, I don't know where this is going to go. I'll take a male host. And it winds up being this whole thing where they like lead you in the back, and there's this like beautiful woman sitting behind this like clear plexiglass desk.
Wait,
and she's,
what? Are you? Do you have a headset on at this
No,
point?
No, this is a physical space.
Oh my God.
Like, this is the office. This is us being like led to the area where they're like, all right, well, we're going to take you in the back, and there's a VR demo that we're going to hook you up to, and we're going to see how it goes. And you welcome to Westworld, home of the Westworld. Like,
just, is this like, ASMR? Welcome to Westworld, home of the Westworld.
It was all very like very quiet. Like, it was totally like,
oh, that's so unnerving.
It felt like a really high end department store, which was fitting because then you put on the VR headset, and they're like, welcome. We're going to outfit you in all of the necessary Westworld attire. This is all custom, bespoke, and totally fit. And this environment showed up in the second episode, where they're basically like, "Hey, get your hat, get your gun. Here's your new stuff." But they had you like using a VR controller to like pick up the gun and like hold it and look at it in your hand, and then put your hat on, and it shows up kind of above your head.
That's
and then
really
it
cool.
warps you to this like oh, Wild West area, cool. and you're looking around, and there's like vultures flying overhead, and people having like a bar fight in the distance, and your host is there, and he's like, "All right, partner, let's get you set up, and you're going to shoot some cans and bottles or some bullets right behind you. Let's see if you're a natural at this." And you're like, "I'm like, of course I'm a natural at using VR at this point, so I'm just like trying to shoot. My gun's like click 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 click. I'm like, get bullets already." And then I just like wave that, and it's clearly like kind of dumbed down for people who haven't done VR before. But if you hadn't done VR before and you'd seen one episode of Westworld, this would have been like, holy crap. But like it definitely got me more interested. And then it does this thing where it like, you know, you go through the experience, and then they're like, "Oh, the robots are getting kind of goofy in here. Let's maybe take you out of it." And then you're suddenly not in a CG environment, but in like just an FMV like 360 video that's basically shot on the Westworld set, and it's got some like graphics on top of it, but it's very much like kind of a jarring shift in what you're seeing in terms of like just the fidelity of the imagery. But and then they pull you out of it and they're like, "Did you enjoy your trip to Westworld?" And I'm like, Yes, it was fine, thank you. And they were like, right this way.
I'm sure that's what, I mean, like, if Westworld, the way it is in the show, were a real thing, I'm sure it'd be really weird to spend, like, a week in this crazy Wild West where you do whatever you want and then get in the train and go to, like, your office job at a bank.
Yeah.
But it was really strange because this is, like, this is a promotional pop-up event. You know, I feel like 5 years ago maybe they'd have, like, a presentation you watched or something.
Yeah,
or, like,
that's
an interview with one of the stars. But in this case, they're like, here's a... This is like the perfect intersection of interactive media and traditional media and technology and convention culture all kind of stacked on top of itself.
Yeah. It's weird. Perfect timing, right?
Yeah. The beginning of that story reminded me, did you guys know what Jejun was?
Yeah, the Jejun Institute.
Yeah.
Pervets.
Pervets?
Real pervets.
They're not pervets.
They're like mystery pervets, okay?
Yeah, I mean, they're mystery pervets. So it was this thing, it was a couple years ago, I was doing it with my ex and... We just finished rewatching Lost at the time. We were telling someone, someone's like, oh, have you done Jejun? And I'm like, we don't know what that is. Like, okay, don't Google it. Go to this building. So there's this giant building downtown right by the Transamerica building. And they're like, go to the 35th floor, take a right, and then there's going to be a receptionist and say that you're there for the Jejun Institute. And we're like, okay.
You actually did that? I would have googled it five minutes later.
It's a friend of ours. And so we get up, 35th floor of this building. We go to the receptionist. And we're like, we're here for the Jejun Institute. And she's like, oh, orientation? And we're like, sure. She's like, all right, right this way. And so we enter a room, and it has all this like weird 70s kind of psychedelic like faux sci-fi, almost like Timothy Leary stuff. Like, and we're just sitting there, and a doctor comes in a white lab coat and gives us this very brief sort of test. And it almost was like if you're trying to get like a pot card. It's like, do you guys have nightmares? I'm like, well, sure, we have nightmares. Like, do you get worried about stuff? I'm like, well, yeah, I get worried about stuff. He fills out some stuff. He's like, all right, I'll be back in a couple minutes. And he leaves, and we're just like, all right. And then the TV comes on, and it's like that scene from Lost, but it's or like I guess the Bob Dylan music video. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman on there with cue cards, and she says, "Don't believe their lies." And she pulls the next one. She says, "Don't go through orientation." And she pulls out another one. She says, "There's a map in the drawer to your right." And so we look to our right, and we open a drawer, and there's a map. And on it, it says, "Don't take the elevator, take the stairs." And so we like sneak out of this building, go down the stairs, and then the rest of the thing is this scavenger hunt throughout San Francisco, where it's like you're going through Chinatown. We had to go into this very specific store in Chinatown and buy this one very specific thing for like $2. That like the people who ran the store like knew that this was a thing, and it all like culminates in you getting back to you go all through Chinatown and North Beach and solving these mysteries and scavenger hunt clue stuff, and it culminates in you getting back to the Jejun Institute. But by the time we got back, the doors were closed, like it's a 9-to-5 thing, and literally it was 2 days before the last thing ever, so we have no idea what the end game is.
Oh man,
yeah.
Oh my
god,
which
that's like super okay, sucked. That sounds like the whole plot to the game with my
oh,
like,
yes, yeah. Yeah,
like that sounds like the entire plot except without the like cathartic ending.
And also, like my brother didn't try to throw me out a window or whatever.
Yeah. I also love that was also last week's episode of You're the Worst was them trying to find a speakeasy by finding all these like arcane clues. Yeah.
Another really good movie to check out if you're interested in this sort of thing is Existenz. David Cronenberg's version of The Matrix. Like I think a month after The Matrix, and it's
Jude Law,
so
right?
much better in hindsight.
Agree.
Similar things. Anyway,
the thing I remember for that is a chicken bone gun. They make a weird gun out of chicken bones, and they have the weird sex things that go.
It's definitely there's like, a lot of.
Right.
It's like hey, if the PlayStation Move requires you to stick stuff inside yourself, that's kind of what you'd be dealing with.
Yeah, it's like VR meets body horror, basically.
Yeah,
that's such a weird movie. I watched that movie. I took a class in art school called History of the Cyborg. Hold for laughs. One day I showed up really late, and my friend and I had been, I don't know what we did, the bad stuff the night before, and we showed up like a little bit late and like very hungover. We walk in.
Did you do the Jejun?
No. No. We did.
That word's starting to become really funny.
Sailor Jerry shots. The Jejeri Institute. But yeah, like we showed up, and it's like 20 minutes into Existenz, which is again an incredibly strange movie, and we sit down and we're just like mouthing, like, at each other across the room, and we're like, you know, we get like to like a halfway through the class, and it's like coffee break, and we go outside, and we're like, what are we watching? What is this movie? So anyway, now it is time for my favorite part of the show.
the end.
The releasing of the doves. No, it's time for Rapid Fire. This is a thing we do every week, usually with Brian Altano. Rest in peace. Knock wood. We go in the Facebook group or on our... no, he's fine. Or our YouTube channel, which is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond or youtube.com/IGNbeyond.
You guys did a Let's Play of the Lego Dimensions...
We did, yeah.
Mission Impossible
with the developers, and I'm really bad at jumping as a Batman, I think.
Batman's not supposed to jump. He's supposed to...
He's also not supposed to be Mission Impossible. That didn't stop those crazy people at the Traveler's Tales.
Those games are so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, rapid fire. Questions time. Everybody, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Austin Park says, what game changed the way you look at games? Mine is KOTOR. Changed storytelling in games for me forever.
God, I feel like I've talked about this so much, but Mario 64. Mario 64 and I think to a little bit lesser extent GTA 3. But Mario 64 for me especially. I think that just made me rethink how big scope could be and made me understand that games can be so much bigger. I mean, there were Super Nintendo games that did that a little bit as well. I think, like, I've talked a lot about Earthbound on SNES and made me realize games could be funny and made me realize games could be contemporary. Like, mm-hmm. it didn't, like, until I played that game, I was like, oh, no one would ever make a video game set in, like, modern day. Why would they do that? Like, why would they be in a small town like I live in? But
yeah,
everything I played before that was,
I remember,
like,
at that point, like,
the past.
With Earthbound, it's like, what if Final Fantasy was set in your neighborhood?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of fighting monsters, you fought rabid dogs.
Yeah, and
crows
pizza.
With cigarettes.
Yeah, and yeah. like one of the status effects in that game is homesickness, and you have to call your mom. Like that. Yeah. That game totally made me rethink like what video games could be and the kind of stories they could tell.
Yeah, yeah, I keep on that, like that Link to the Past, and then further like down the road, Grim Fandango.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
that was just a super adult story.
Okay.
Yeah, for me it would be Silent Hill. I think.
Oh yeah.
Just because like. That was the first game that I played that really got under my skin in a deeply psychological way.
Yeah.
And every game I played prior to that had had been a lot more American, a lot lighter, a lot sort of the stories that I was used to seeing in movies and television. And here was something that was completely different and messed up. And it just it was like ice water, you know, in my veins while I was playing that game. Yeah. And I guess for me, I've never sort of... I realized that games can be actually terrifying, mm-hmm. and that's why I've been a huge fan of yeah. horror games since.
Yeah, nurses don't have to be nice. They can be very scary.
They can be really scary.
Sometimes naughty nurses.
Sometimes you can wear a pyramid on your head.
Yeah.
Take
also,
that off.
Also, the first game to ever make me cry, which is weird.
Silent Hill 1 or 2?
Silent Hill 1. Like when Lisa dies.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if she doesn't die, but when she realizes who she is. Yeah. Spoiler alert, I'm sorry.
I think we're fine.
But, you know, that moment for me, like, I remember that was yeah. the first time I actually cried in a video
yeah.
game.
Yeah, horror games are just exceptionally strange because, like, I've always said, you know, video games are the only medium that pushes back against you. Like,
right.
if a movie gets too scary, you close your eyes, but it keeps playing. And, like, yep. a book, if you stop reading it, it kind of, it stops being
functioning.
A book.
Yeah,
that's
but
right.
it's
also that's right.
It doesn't change the end of it from being the end of it. It's still there. Everything is kind of automatic in a sense, but like video games, like you have to make your character move forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
like, it was really funny. I was watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre yesterday.
Love that movie.
Yeah. I've actually never seen it before. It was
oh,
really,
the
yeah,
original.
Very original. Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
And I know that I'd always been kind of scared of it, but then I was watching it. I was like, this is hokey as hell. And then
yeah.
I was watching it with Jen and she's like, what is she? I mean, she's doing like the classic, like, why would you go up there? Why would you go in there? What's wrong with you? And I'm like, cause it's a slasher movie. It's like the first slasher movie. Like,
right.
There's no common sense here, but also like you do things that don't make any sense when you're under pressure. Like when I yeah. mean, she'll do like I was watching her play Last of Us recently, and you know she something would jump out at her, and she'd be like bah, and she'd like pull up the menu, and I'm like, huh, maybe that's kind of the equivalent of that.
going upstairs when you shouldn't, it's pulling up the menu.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, for me, Metal Gear Solid.
Yes.
That was the first time that I was like. Oh, how did they get the music from The Rock in here? Like and also that just the level of like of kind of cinematic storytelling, you know, for better and for worse, because sometimes you just want to actually play the game. But for it to be like, oh, this is feels like a movie that you can interact with,
mm-hmm.
And then it also had that layer of incredible like weirdness,
yeah, and like meta
yeah.
sit in this where
yeah.
it was like because I'm the same as you, like for me it was the first game that. Was I was playing that was sort of aware that it was a game,
mm-hmm.
and that was really weird and cool.
Yeah, like having a boss that reads your memory card files,
yeah.
or
yeah.
just the fact that they're like, hey, there's more than one way to do things, and it doesn't tell you that anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
right.
Yeah, you got to go get the IR goggles so you can see the tripwires. Or
smoke.
Smoke some cigarettes that you smuggled in your butthole or your stomach.
Yeah, because did you got really wet getting in there.
Did he eat the
there.
Cigarettes? What did he do with that?
Yeah, no, I think it was butthole.
Butthole?
I think it was butthole.
Yeah, butthole cigarettes. Butthole.
That's really awful.
My favorite 90s band.
Yeah. Solid Snake. Awful man. Yeah. But, yeah, Metal Gear's cool. Jeff Vandenbosch says, are you guys going to be at PSX? That's a great question.
Marty and I definitely will. And then TBD on who the rest of the team is, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I yeah. We're playing. I know people in the Facebook group said they want to play in a meetup.
Oh, cool.
Which is good, because I don't know anything about Anaheim other than the Mighty Ducks.
Well, the best place to eat is the California Pizza Kitchen.
Wow.
I thought you said that there were nice restaurants by the convention center.
Yeah, wait, so not right by the convention center. No, I mean, the only time I've really been there was for BlizzCon 2013.
I'll have the Mighty Duck Comfy.
Yes. Right. But no, yeah. Yeah. We'll find a place.
Okay. Matthew Fieldhouse says, who do you think is going to win the Great British Bake Off? What is your reaction to the news that it is moving channels and losing most of its presenters and judges?
Can a single person on this in this table, like in this room, answer that?
Yes. So okay, the thing is, right.
last week, yeah.
Right. Andrew, last week's episode was weird. It was just Andrew and I, and then we brought in rotating guests, rotating thirds. And I think to kill time in between two people, he started talking about the Great British Bake Off. I got mad at him and I said, no one cares. It turns out a lot of people care. A lot of people really like the Great British Bake Off.
Yeah.
I don't know why anyone lets me on the show. I think Candace.
You have squatters' rights. You've been here longer than the rest of us.
Candace or Selassie or Benjamina would be my pick to win. And I think it's very sad that everyone's leaving next season, that the show's just going to be weird old Paul Hollywood. And
yeah, I'm pretty sure people felt that way about this show, too. Anyway, yeah, that show's really strange. I don't really watch those shows, but I went over to a friend's house and they were all like just watching it, really into it, and it was kind of surprising how like pleasant everyone is.
Show, like Mary Berry.
She's incredible.
She's like a force of nature.
Yeah. They're like, this cake is absolutely terrible, but you tried.
Yeah, yeah.
You should feel bad about yourself, but not that bad, I guess. Sebastian Thrower says, has a game ever hit too close to home for you, for better and or for worse?
Ooh.
Played Braid right after a breakup.
Yikes.
And it was a breakup where, like, it was one of those. I was like, oh, it was definitely her fault. And I came to the realization that I was like, no, it was totally my fault. And that's sort of what Braid is about.
Hmm.
And so, like, playing that just at the right time and right place in my life, I was like, oh, yikes. Yep. Jobs been blown. I know what's going on.
Yeah, that'll be rough.
Yeah.
Man, I don't think I've really had a game hit too close to home for me, story-wise, honestly.
Yeah. No, neither.
Yeah. I mean, that probably like movies and TV shows have done that to me, but I don't know that I've necessarily had a game.
Playing Metal Gear Solid 2 in the aftermath of 9/11, when like people were like, "Why is there like is the government like spying on us? Or is there cyanide in the mail? Like what's happening?
Yeah.
What's going on right now?" And then it's all like, "Oh, memetics, you have to fight the president on a roof."
I mean, yeah, I reviewed that Dragon Cancer, which was hard to play, but I wouldn't say that it was because you know I haven't had a child who's had cancer, so I can't say, oh yeah, it hit close to home, but it was definitely it was very emotional that game.
Even a child without cancer, like Justin can't play that game because he's like, I have a daughter, like I could
never it's definitely a difficult game to play. Yeah.
And there were, I mean, times over the weekend when we were playing Mafia 3 is much different, but there was like, I killed a Klansman and then the cops surrounded me, shot me dead, and then the words right before I died, it came up, the cops have witnessed a crime and just shot me dead. Mm-hmm. And so, and it was obviously like the gameplay in Mafia is very disparate from the storytelling, but it was just that image. Like, I think I was on your couch when we were playing it. We're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, damn.
Yeah.
That's not obviously not too close to home for our experience, but like in terms of like real life tragedies. For sure. Yeah.
Playing a game that hits too close to home for better, I would say Sybil. The Nina Freeman's game.
100%, yeah.
That's a game about basically falling in love with someone over the internet. Totally used to have like live journal friend crushes and stuff. And it brought me back to like kind of a weird point in time when it was kind of pre-social media, but still having.
Yeah, and even like I was playing that game like right at the tail end of a long distance relationship, and it was sort of weirdly reminiscent of that too. Like, yeah, that game's brilliant. I love that game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like good music, I suppose, right?
Yeah,
the totally.
The thing that always takes you right back there.
Yep.
Jacob Meyer says, "Have any of you ever seen a psychic/palm reader/tarot card person deets?"
deets.
Yeah, that's like the backwards hat on that sentence.
I've told Marty like 10 different times that I want to just like be like, hey, Max, we're taking you somewhere special for your birthday and take you to a palm reader someday.
All right. We were walking by a palm reader the other day. We should take Max here.
Yeah.
Why so, specifically Max? I don't
know. It's really weird.
Well, because we had a stretch where every time it was someone's birthday, we'd take them to an appropriately themed restaurant.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. We took Brian to Buca di Beppo's, which is the most garish Italian fake restaurant you could ever imagine.
Yep.
And we were like, well, we want to expand from food. Like, we want to take Alana to the Outback Steakhouse.
Yep. Yep.
And I feel like yours wouldn't
really?
Be food.
Really? I feel like that's – I don't – what does that say about me?
What?
That you want to know what's going to happen in your future.
I don't want to know what's going to happen in
no,
my future.
No, you're a real mystical dude.
No, I'm not.
I'm also,
a real mystical
no,
you, dude.
No,
no one's
yeah.
ever said that.
No. The thing is, no, you are like Kurt Russell in Big Trouble in Little China. And so we need to add some mysticism to your life.
Right. Okay, that's fair. Okay, I get that.
I like that you just talk Max off the ledge. He's like, yeah, right.
Yeah,
I'm
okay,
on board.
I'll take it. Right, yeah. I'll take it.
What is this? Some kind of magic potion?
But also, so I've never been to one, but an idea I want to do before E3, don't steal it, internet, is go to a psychic right before and have her try to predict the press conferences.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, God. That poor person.
Yeah. I don't know why I said her. I don't know why I immediately was like, psychics are women.
Did you notice I went a bit gender neutral?
Yeah. No, which is totally fine because I said her. And I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of like the old trope of like thinner or something. Like,
To throw that trope to the wind, there was a guy I went to high school with who used to do a lot of tarot reading. He was like kind of a theater nerd, kind of a regular nerd, kind of just a strange dude. But he would do this. We occasionally had like a Renaissance fair at school. It was like, you know, put on by theater and history and whatever. And they all get together. But he would do like a fortune telling booth when he'd have his tarot cards out. But he would always be like, I'm sorry, I love this. He'd always be really biased. and none of us knew tarot, so we can't really call him on it. But I'd go up and I'd be like, hey, what's up, man? He's like, oh, how's it going? And I was like, I don't know, I was kind of mean to him. But like, we sort of got all, I wasn't mean to him, but I was like, I would tease him here and there. I would like friend bullying, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would be like, huh. Let's see. It's the Knight of Crosses and then the Cup of Clubs or whatever. And they're like, it's like, yeah, this means that you think you're really funny, but you know what? Maybe you're not. And I was like, it's not a fortune telling. But then he'd do it to girls that he liked, and he'd be like, this is my favorite. Be like, it says you're going to meet your true love soon. He's got
maybe very soon. Maybe you just met him.
He's got blue eyes. His name begins with K, and he loves the Indigo Girls. And you're like, they'd be like, that's incredibly specific. It talks about the Indigo Girls in the tarot. So yeah, really, really nice kid. But that was like, it was kind of weird to be like, so what's your
what a racket to run?
What was your role in high school? Were you like a jock or a nerd or like a fortune teller?
my favorite class.
Yeah. Finally, AJ Mastix is sweet or spicy?
Spicy.
Such. I mean, gun to my head, spicy but sweet is so wonderful. Like, I feel like there are those moments where I'm like, I have a craving for
something
savory.
Sounds like a Fiona
savory.
Apple album.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, yeah, probably spicy.
Yeah. I mean,
sweets are great, though.
I'm biased there. So.
Like Greg Miller's pumpkin bread.
Yeah.
Very great.
So what I like is that sweets are generally going to make you fat, but spicy is sort of a thing you can put on something that won't make you fat to make it more fun.
It's true.
You can have like really boring salad and put hot sauce on it, and you're like, oh, this salad hurts, but at least it's better than being boring.
At least I feel like I'm living.
Yeah. No, I have a friend who's like just like super like manorexic, and he will unscrew the top of like the red pepper thing, and he'll have like one slice of pizza, but he'll just like cover it in red pepper and then hold it up and shake off the excess like he's making a glitter snowflake in kindergarten. And then he'll eat
Scott.
Yeah, I'm absolutely talking about Scott. And then he'll just like, yeah, he'll eat that whole thing, and you're like, what comes out of you? That's terrifying.
Is it worth it?
Yeah. Anyway, that about wraps us up.
Wraps us up like mummies?
It's so hot in here. Yeah, wraps us up like mummies. A seasonal treat. A cornucopia of old mummies.
Before we wraps us up, we should say that in, 3 days from the day where this will go live, there's an IGN house party in San Francisco.
Saturday the 15th.
You can still get tickets. It's go.ign.com/IGN house party, or it's the pinned tweet on IGN.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'd love to see you.
We're all going to be there. Brian's going to be there.
Even I'm going to be there.
Even
crap.
Lucy.
Even I'm going going
to
be
awesome.
It, think of how much money you'd be saving over a trip to Australia.
Yeah, sure.
Probably a lot.
Yeah.
Also, if you fly to Australia, you might not even see Lucy.
That's probably likely, actually.
It's one of the largest islands.
Yeah. Yeah. But everyone, pretty much everyone from IGN will be there. Brian will be there. Alana will be there. Yeah,
and Jared, if you want a job in the industry, our esteemed editor-in-chief, Steve Butts, and our founder, Per Schneider, will be doing a Q&A about how to get a job here. And anyone who gives them a resume, they will personally get back to you and tell you what they thought, which is really cool.
That's amazing.
I would have killed for that.
That's incredible.
Those poor idiots, why would they agree to do that? Yeah. That sounds like a very hard.
Yeah. I'm gonna put a sneak resume in there and see what happens.
A cool trick to getting a good job is to print your resume on $100 bills.
Yeah. Someone printed sent us a resume on a cake once.
And we ate the cake, and everyone's like, hey, did anyone take a picture of that and get the guy's name? And then we're like, nope. Not great.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, you can follow us all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Andrew is Garfep. Marty is McBiggity. Lucy, what's yours?
I'm Luce O'Brien, L-U-C-E O'Brien.
Lucifer for Halloween.
That's
name.
Just Lucifer for Halloween.
I don't like those Halloween things.
Well, it's the first
time I
did
get
it.
Tricked. Like, I see that name, and I'm like, I don't know who Spooky McGillicuddy is.
Well,
it's
annoying when
it's
like, Spooky McGillicuddy retweeted this, and then you have to click through to see who it was, yeah.
Lucy, you could totally dress up like Lucifer from Wicked and Divine.
Oh, okay, yeah. I've actually been told that before. Yeah. Like,
do you have a Halloween plan?
A few times.
Do you know what you're going to be for Halloween?
No, I was actually, I bought a pair of Holtzman glasses for $90 because $90? I'm insane.
Well, I guess you're going as Holtzman then.
So, I guess I'm going as Holtzman.
What? I need a Halloween. Please send me Halloween costume.
Max already has his. Yours
Oh, yeah, yours is amazing. Yeah,
it's not done.
Even the family's getting involved.
I need to build a robot arm.
Yeah. No, I'm doing Venom Snake, and I've got pretty much everything except the robot arm. And I need to find my Walkman.
And Peppers is...
Yeah, I got Peppers is D-Dog. I got a little tactical vest.
Aww.
And he's like a little diamond
cute.
Dog.
I have no idea where I'm going to be yet. And we're running out of time.
Yeah. All right. Running out of time for the show, too. So be sure to... Don't calm down.
I don't know, Marty. You're looking at me.
God, stop
my
it,
eyes.
Both of you.
It's just my eyes.
You're like pets sometimes. You just get all weird and start messing with each
peppers.
Other.
You get weird and mess with each other.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, that sometimes my animals fight. And I'm like, are you mad at each other? Are you just playing? I don't know what you're doing. We started like getting just like up in each other's business. I'm like, these stupid idiots and little animals. All right, Beyond. We'll be back whenever we do this again.
Either it'll be next week.
Yeah, or this weekend, whatever.
Or this weekend also.
So hot in here. I'm gonna try to figure out how to download.
It's very hot.
All right.
Thank you, Lucy.
Bye.
Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.